frivolous talk, sampapalapa. We should also avoid frivolous talk. Frivolous talk is a talk that has nothing to do with truth, or one's welfare, or the Dhamma, or the Buddha's instructions. It is a talk that is not worthy of remembrance. In short, it is a misrepresentation of fiction as fact. But by and large, people are fond of fiction. With their clever imagination, writers produce popular novels which are sold out in a month. There is a big demand for their books. By contrast, religious books have only a few readers because they do not have mass appeal like works of fiction. Frivolous writings pander to popular desires and turn the weal and woe of human life into fiction with various elaborations. True to the Salaika Dhamma, we should pledge to avoid speaking, writing, or spreading anything that is frivolous. One who practices this Salaika Dhamma will talk only about what is true or about what is beneficial or about the Dhamma or about the Buddha's teaching or about what is worthy of remembrance. Even when we talk wisely, we must talk at the right moment. Moreover, we should not talk excessively. Even in our talks about the Dhamma, we must pay due regard to circumstances. If you often preach a man who has no spiritual inclination, he will be afraid to listen to the Dhamma. And if you repeatedly urge him to practice it, he will soon give you a wide berth. So you should be discreet and teach him gradually at the right time. But in case of a very intimate friend, we should bear in mind the story of Gatikara and urge him persistently to take interest in the Dhamma. The story of Gatikara. In the lifetime of Kassapa Buddha, there was a potter called Gatikara. He was a lay disciple who had attained Anagami stage. One day, he urged his friend Jyotipala thrice to see the Buddha. Jyotipala was not an ordinary man. He was a bodhisattva. But as a Brahmin, and what with his deep-seated religious beliefs, he had a low opinion of the Buddha, and hence his scornful rejection of the potter's advice. Traditional beliefs are really formidable, and so Gatikara, the potter, took Jyotipala to the riverside for a bath, and after taking his bath, Jyotipala put on his loincloth and was standing for a while to get his hair dry. When the potter told him to see the Buddha at his residence nearby, Gatikara proposed thrice, and his proposal was turned down thrice as before. Then the potter got hold of his friend's loincloth and again urged him to see the Buddha, but it was in vain. At last the potter grasped his hair and repeated his suggestion. Then Jyotipala was stunned. He wondered why the low-caste potter had dared to hold his hair. He thought that the potter had the courage to do so, probably because of his faith in his teacher, the Buddha. So he asked the potter, "Is this matter so important that you have to hold my hair?" Yes, it is, said the potter. Then Jyotipala considered the potter's request seriously, concluded that it might be a matter of no small consequences, and agreed to see the Buddha with his friend. After seeing the Buddha and hearing the Dhamma, he was converted and joined the Sangha. Thus, because his suggestion was bound to benefit his friend, the low-caste, untouchable potter urged the high-caste Brahmin, first by word of mouth, then by catching hold of his loincloth, and finally by holding his hair. His persistence contributed to the spiritual welfare of his friend, and the latter was much grateful to him. Likewise, today, although some people had at first no interest in the Dhamma, they came to our center to meditate in response to the persistent request of their friends. By virtue of their effort and karmic potential, they gain spiritual experience for which they are much indebted to their Dharma friends. There are many such yogis, and their experience shows how persistent urging often pays. That is why the Dhamma has the attribute of ehi pasiko, come and see. It invites everyone to test it. Just as a man who enjoys good food is thankful to the man who has invited him to the feast, so also the yogi, who has had some spiritual experience, thanks the person who has urged him to practice the Dhamma. So we should persist in urging our intimate friends to practice Satipatthana meditation. Of the good talks that are commendable, those about welfare, atthara, and teaching or discipline, vinaya, concern worldly matters too. In other words, we should engage in talks that are beneficial or edifying in our everyday affairs. But monks have to avoid any kind of talk that is prescribed in the Vinaya Pitaka. Even the meditating layman should avoid the kind of talk called Tirachanakata, which means any talk that is incompatible with spiritual progress. Talks of this kind are those about kings, thieves, rebels, ministers, armies, food, drinks, clothes, relatives, vehicles, villages, towns, men, women, and so forth. If these talks have nothing to do with emotional shock, weariness, faith, or wisdom, they are to be labelled sampapalapa, or frivolous talk, and as such they should be avoided. Karmic effects. According to Anguttara Nikaya, the karmic result of frivolous talk is that the talker is liable to land in the nether worlds. And if reborn as a human being, most people do not pay attention to what they say. Typical of the frivolous talk that is vicious enough to lead to the lower worlds is serious talk about such things as the story of the fighting of Bharata kings in Mahabharata, the legend of the kidnapping of Sita Devi by the ogre Ravana called Dasagiri, and so forth. The commentaries describe only such talks as sampapalapa. The following is the condensation of the story in Mahabharata. On the bank of Yamuna River, a son was born of the union of the hermit Parasara and Satyavati. The son was called Dipayana. After his birth, his mother became a virgin again through the supernatural power of the hermit. Dipayana later became a hermit, Vyasa by name. He promised to come when his mother wished to see him. Later, Satyavati was made queen by Santanu, the king of Kurus. She bore him two sons, the elder Chitringadahu and the younger Chitravirya. When King Chitravirya died, leaving two queens but no offspring, Satyavati sought the help of Vyasa, the hermit, to preserve the royal family line. The hermit was so ugly that on his approach the elder queen shut her eyes, and so she gave birth to a blind son, Dhatarata. The younger queen looked at him with her feeble eyes, and so she got a feeble son, Pandu. Pandu became king because his brother was blind. The latter married Gandhari, daughter of the Gandhara king. She had 100 sons, the eldest being Duryodhana. One day, King Pandu killed a couple of mating deers with his bow. The male deer, being a powerful hermit, he cursed the king to die while enjoying sex. So Pandu decided to avoid sexual intercourse. He had two queens, Kunti and Madi. Neither of them had a son to succeed Pandu. Kunti prayed and had three sons, Yudhishthira, Bhima and Arjuna, through her relations with the god Dhamma, the wind god, and Saka, respectively. Madhi had twins, Nakula and Sahadeva, through two Asawi gods. Pandu died and was succeeded by the blind prince Dhatarata. Dhatarata's son, Duryodhana, and others were called Kauravyasa, while Pandu's sons were hated by Duryodhana and others. Yudhishthira and others were called Pandavas. Being brave warriors, Pandu's sons were hated by Duryodhana and others. So after consultation with his younger brother, Pusasana, his friend Kanna, and his uncle Sakuni, he ordered the Pandavas, in the name of the king, to practice elephant warfare at a rural house. His plan was to burn the house and kill them while they were sleeping at night. But being warned by Vidura, the wise man, Kunti and her five sons fled and escaped death. But they had to endure much hardship in the jungle, and the five princes had to lie low in the guise of Brahmins. The story also tells how Bhima killed two man-eating giants. Later, disguised as Brahmins, the five princes attended the ceremony for the choice of a suitor by Kanha, the daughter of King of Panchala. The princess was to garland the suitor of her choice. The meeting was also attended by Duryodhana and his party, as well as by local princess. Kanha's brother announced the names of suitors. This was to introduce them to the princess. It was a contest of skill. The contestants tried one after another to string a bow but no one was successful. Kana, a charioteer of Duryodhana faction, managed to string the bow, and he was about to shoot the target, when the princess shouted that she would not choose him. At last, Arjuna, who was disguised as a Brahmin, stringed the bow, shot, and hit the target. Kanha garlanded and chose him, but Arjuna said that she was not meant only for him, and in accordance with the family tradition, she became the wife of the five brothers. Oddly enough, she was somewhat like Kanha Devi in Kunala Jataka. Finally, the fighting broke out between the princes, headed by Duryodhana and their cousins, led by Yudhishthira, and they killed one another. The war is described in Mahabharata. People are instructed to accept all these as facts and hear the story again and again. Everyone who recites or hears it sincerely is assured of liberation from all evil karma and passage to higher abodes after death. Ramayana tells us elaborately how Rama's wife, Sita Devi, was abducted to Ceylon by the giant Ravana, and how Rama fought Ravana with the help of the monkey Hanuman and recovered his wife. The believer who recites and hears this story is also guaranteed a heavenly life after death. In fact, to those who are not orthodox Hindus and intelligent, it is obvious that these stories are myths and fabrications. If we regard these stories as real events, the belief will impede spiritual progress and cause much harm. To encourage the belief in such stories will therefore lead to lower worlds and lack of credibility in case of rebirth in the human world. According to the commentaries, listening to frivolous stories is karmically harmful only if one believes them. Again, Visuddhimagga and other commentaries say that the yogi can overcome interest in frivolous talk only at the arahata stage. Therefore, we assume that interest in ordinary frivolous talk, like one of the 30 kinds of it that do not lead to the nether worlds, still lingers at the lower stages of the holy path. The karmic results of abstinence from frivolous talk is, of course, the opposite of the best of the evils that beset one who indulges in it. One who avoids frivolous talk goes to higher abodes after death, and if reborn as a human being, is highly esteemed and trusted by other people. Covetousness, abhijja. You should also avoid abhijja or covetousness. In other words, abhijja is the intention to possess another person's property unlawfully. But in the Salaika Sutta, sensual desire, which is only a hindrance, is also described as abhijja. So we should regard it as both kinds of lopa, greed, that is lopa, that is productive of evil conduct, and lopa that is not so productive. We have the first kind of abhijja when we crave for the possession of another person's property. Here, abhijja means not the intent to buy the property, but the intent to own it unlawfully. Four kinds of covetousness. Abhijja, as a mere hindrance, nivarana, is of four kinds. One, ordinary desire. Two, papicca. Three, mahicca. And four, atricca. One, ordinary desire, is desire for something which one sees or hears, or which one neither sees nor hears. This kind of desire is hard to overcome by making a vow or just by an act of will. It will dominate us so long as we are not free from greed nor power. But the meditating yogi should be on his guard against it. Whenever it crops up, he must watch and reject it. 2. Papicca is the desire to win the respect and admiration of others of which one is not worthy. Some persons wish to give others the impression of having faith, which they do not have, of having moral integrity, which they do not possess, or of having knowledge, which they lack, or of having practiced the Dharma without any practice, or of attaining jhana without any attainment, or of having insight knowledge, vipassana jnana, or psychic powers, which they do not have, or of being Aryas or Arahats, without having any Aryan qualification or attributes of Arahatship. Some pretend to be Arahats so as to mislead other people. They welcome people who regard them as Arahats. This desire to be esteemed and admired for the quality which one does not have is called papicca, wicked desire. The Salaika Sutta stresses the need for freeing oneself from this kind of desire. 3. Mahicca is inordinate greed. A man who is consumed with inordinate greed is not content with what he has. He wants to have too much of everything and to have things of better quality. It is important to lessen this kind of greed. 4. Atricca is desire for something that belongs to another, under the impression that it is better than what one has. In other words, it is discontentment. The effort to overcome it is of great importance, for many people have to suffer in their search for something new, which they think is better than the old. The Sutta's teaching on abhijja is primarily concerned with covetousness that is productive of evil conduct. So a few more words about it. Abhijja is the desire to have unlawfully something that belongs to another. Nowadays, this kind of desire seems to dominate many people. There are talks and instructions about ways and means of getting other people's property. As a result, there are people who apparently look forward to possessing things that do not belong to them. In reality, they are not likely to realize their hopes. But whenever we think of getting another person's property, the evil thought occurs together with its karmic effects. So if we wish to practice Salaika Dhamma, we should not harbour such thoughts, but try to get what we want by lawful means, buy it at the proper price, and honestly seek the money for it. Covetous thought by itself is karmically effective, and the effect may be potent enough to lead to the lower worlds. The intent to steal or rob is more serious in that it is the volitional prelude to the commission of crime, and still worse, of course, is the actual commission. We should therefore overcome such evil, grave deeds through moral integrity and reflections such as, I do not like anyone who tries to get my property unlawfully. In the same way, nobody will like me if I try to get his property unlawfully. we should also cultivate concentration constantly, in order that it may leave no room for covetousness, covetous thought in the mind. Covetousness may arise when we see, hear about, smell, eat, contact, or use desirable objects belonging to others. So the yogi who is constantly mindful at the moment of seeing, etc., finds everything vanishing whenever he notes a phenomenon with his potent insight knowledge. This makes it impossible for him to covet other person's property, let alone to think of getting it unlawfully. Thus we can overcome covetousness through insight meditation too. It can be rooted out when we attain the path of the Noble Ones or Arhats, the complete extinction of covetousness that leads to misconduct is assured at the Sotapatti stage, and so is the extinction of wicked desire, papiccha. Other kinds of covetousness are to be eliminated at the three higher holy stages. Visuddhimagga says that abhijja is wholly done away with only at the stage of arahatship. It says so because it describes ordinary greed, lobha, also as a kind of abhijja. So we assume that Sotapatti stage ensures the extinction of evil conduct-oriented abhijja and papiccha, since these two defilements are liable to lead to the nether worlds. The Salaka Sutta, which teaches us to overcome abhijja, is very profound in that it tells us to practice the Dharma to the point of overcoming it, abhijja, through the attainment of the four holy stages. Let us affirm then that, whilst others are covetous, we will avoid covetousness. We will seek spiritual uplift through non-covetousness. We will put an end to the defilement of covetousness through non-covetousness. Vyapada, ill will. Vyapada is the evil intent to bring about the death or destruction of a person. So in the Pali texts, defining the term Vyapada, it is said, may these living beings be ill-treated or killed. May the whole tribe or clan be wiped out, destroyed or become extinct. There is such kind of intent to do wrong and destroy other beings. Thus, Vyapada is the intent to cause the death or ill treatment of a hated person or persons. The intent in itself is unwholesome karma in thought. At the very least, the desire for the death or destruction of things like mosquitoes and bugs amount to karmically effective ill will. But as these lower forms of life have no morality, ill will against them is not very grave in its karmic effect. The effect is very grave if we long for the death or destruction of men and monks who have good moral and other attributes. Therefore, we should remove ill will by cultivating love and radiating goodwill. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from mental and physical suffering. May all beings live happily. This is the best way to avoid the evil path of ill will by means of the good path of love. If we cultivate love in this way, we can advance from one stage to another and put out the fire of ill will by means of the pure water of love. People who have no self-control are intent on the death and destruction of those whom they hate. We who live among such people will free ourselves from ill will. We will overcome ill will by cultivating love. If we have ill will, we must remove it through mindfulness. Such is the practice of Seleka Dhamma. We can conquer ill will through insight meditation, that is, through mindfulness at every moment of seeing, hearing, and so forth. When we see a person whom we do not want to see, or when we hear a sound which we do not wish to hear, especially when we learn what a person is doing to endanger our interest, or when we find or know what we do not want to find or know, we have ill will, saying, "Damn that fellow, a plague on him." But with mindfulness at every moment of seeing, etc., we can find every thought and feeling passing away instantly, and then it is impossible for ill will to arise. Therefore, constant mindfulness of every mental event rules out the possibility of ill will, and that is the way to overcome it through the practice of vipassana, insight meditation. If we cannot practice vipassana, we can overcome ill will through the development of loving kindness, metta bhavana. We should radiate loving kindness to every living being whom we see or hear. Then there will be no ill will against those people, living beings whom we do not see or hear should also be the focus of our loving kindness. If we watch the consciousness that suffuses loving kindness, it means insight meditation. Thus, by suffusing loving kindness and making a note of it, we can advance in our insight knowledge from one stage to another till we attain anagami stage, when ill will becomes completely extinct. Even at the Sotapatti stage, the yogi is free from ill will that can lead to the lower worlds. So we should seek at least the Sotapatti stage to overcome ill will, and if possible, we should strive to attain the anagami stage for its total extinction. Let us then develop loving kindness and meditate. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be free from mental suffering. May all beings be free from physical suffering. May all beings live happily. In developing loving kindness, the consciousness that is focused on it, as well as the physical act of willing, disappears instantly. This disappearance indicates the law of impermanence. Impermanence is suffering, and impermanence and suffering, anicca and dukkha, are signs of insubstantiality, anatta. Such awareness of the matter of things, as we know, as we develop loving kindness, is insight knowledge, vipassana. Let us then practice vipassana while developing metta, loving kindness, at the same time. May all beings be free from danger. May all beings be able to bear the burden of the khandhas.